Welcome to the Fitfluential Radio Podcast, the intersection of health, wellness, and fitness. Join host Kelly Olexa as she interviews thought leaders and world-class experts in order to demystify and deconstruct complex health and wellness topics. The goal of each episode is to provide you with actionable everyday tips and information that you can apply in your lifestyle. Now here's your host, Kelly Olexa.
Everybody, and welcome to Fitfluential Radio. I'm your host, Kelly Olexa, and today on the show, it is a privilege to welcome Laurel Wassner. This interview, just once I started looking at Laurel's background and her history, I was almost a little intimidated to interview somebody who has really taken a life with a lot of obstacles and a lot of hurdles, for lack of a better word, and just triumph. And she's got a story that I love because she has such an incredible, again, an incredible triumph over cancer. And yet it's not one of these stories where it's, oh, hey, I was diagnosed and it was, you know, snap, no problem. Just moved right along and I conquered it and I pushed through. It's a very real story that she has, with real ups and downs and nothing close to an overnight success. And I think so many of us, whether we are someone who pursues marathons and considers ourselves, you know, an endurance runner, or whether you just casually run, or maybe running's not even your thing, there's no way you will not be inspired by this interview and by this woman. Just a tremendous individual. A little bit from her official bio: Laurel is the younger half, by 5 minutes, of the Wassner twins. She is a survivor of Hodgkin's lymphoma and is the first cancer survivor to become a professional triathlete. Laurel was named Rookie of the Year her first year as a pro in 2008. She's competitive and athletic from the start, and by age four, yes, four, a long pause inserted there for dramatic effect, Laurel was swimming in meets, riding a bike, and running, racing the cars home from kindergarten. She continued swimming and ran her first cross-country race at age 10. She ran through junior high, undefeated in cross-country, never beaten by her twin, and started focusing on swimming in high school, going on to swim distance freestyle for George Washington University. She did her first triathlon in 2016 and also won her first triathlon in 2006 as well. After a successful year as an elite amateur in 2007, she turned pro in 2008. She won her first pro race in a breakthrough performance in 2010 at the Columbia Triathlon, becoming the first cancer survivor to win a professional triathlon. I'm sharing this entire bit of detail here for you because in the midst of all that, and that's what you're going to hear in this story, is when she was diagnosed with cancer. And so in the midst of all of that, you get to hear how this woman, who started off a very athletic child, was diagnosed, dealt with that blow, dealt with the illness, dealt with how it changed her life, and then made a tremendous comeback. And again, it's just living a life that is worthy of tuning into, and I just think she's a remarkable individual. I had a real pleasure interviewing her, and I can't wait to have her back on the show. So for now, everybody, sit back, enjoy this interview with Laurel Wassner. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Fitfluential Radio. I'm your host, Kelly Olexa, and today on the show, as I mentioned, I am very pleased and thrilled and honored, frankly, to have Laurel Wassner on the show. Laurel, welcome to Fitfluential Radio. Are you ready to go and chat?
I'm ready, and thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. It was when I read your bio, I was overwhelmed by how much life you've packed into your jam-packed life, and you have had no shortage of challenges. And certainly I alluded to your story that you are the first cancer survivor to, am I right, win an Ironman? And I'll let you correct that if I'm wrong.
But no, that's correct.
Okay. Sometimes I get on the show and I start off my first question and somebody's like, Kelly, wrong data. So I always want to make sure, and I do have my glasses on so I can double check. But for those that are just hearing about you on the show, you really have a remarkable story, and you started
at such a young age. And I think it's awesome if we can start off with you sharing with our audience, you know, we know that you're this, I'm just going to say it. I think triathletes are badass people. They're just, you like the whole, everything about being, doing triathlons blows my mind, because to me, swimming terrifies me. I like the idea of being a cyclist, but when you're that kind of a cyclist, that's a whole other world. And I do running, but not anywhere near a marathon. So everything that you do is stuff that I look at and go, you are superhuman. But you started at such a young age. So tell us your story. When did you start becoming active and into sports and athletics? And then when, how did that translate into becoming a triathlete?
Well, I really did start getting active when I was very young. And I still have vivid memories of being 5 years old and running home from my kindergarten, racing, trying to race cars home. And I remember when I was in kindergarten, and this is going way back, I was able to just climb to the top of this really high ceiling on a rope.
Shut up!
Today, that would probably never go. That would never fly. They wouldn't allow a kid to do that. But I remember thinking, wow, like no one else, none of the boys could do it.
That's awesome.
So I did start, and then I started swimming around that same time as well. And my sisters and I had a babysitter who was a champion swimmer. And she took care of us in the summer and just taught us how to swim. And then we ended up joining the swim team in our neighborhood, and I swam my whole life after that.
Did you, you know, I remember when I was young, and I think my mom had aspirations for me. My brother is somebody who was active in every sport, and he excelled. My sister ran track, and she was really great at it and was just very athletic. I think I was that middle, like, what's going on with Kelly child, where my mom, on one hand, she tried to encourage me to pursue music, and it was violin lessons, flute lessons, and piano lessons. For those listening, I don't know how to read notes, so I can tell you what kind of pressure that put on me to try to get through that. But I remember swimming lessons, and swimming terrified me. And maybe it's because I didn't know how to do it, but I'm curious, at such a young age, you know, maybe it's because you had somebody that was your babysitter that you trusted so much, but were you ever scared as a child starting some of this? I just remember being scared to get water up my nose, or was I just a wimp? You can be honest with me.
I had a no fear attitude when I was little. So I think I was trying to keep up with our boy cousins and also with the swimming. Where I grew up in Maryland, it's swimming is a really big sport there. So all of the little neighborhoods had a pool and a swim team. And still to this day, the DC area is known for producing a lot of really great athletes. And that was sort of a part of a major part of our growing up. So, and all of our friends did it. And I think that just because everybody else was doing it, there was like no room for any of the fear or the, I don't want to do it, or, you know, just because everybody else was, our friends were doing it.
That's interesting. And, you know, I mentioned I wanted to potentially cover this, but I think this might be a good spot. We were talking about before the show, everybody, I said, you know, when I was reading Laurel's bio, I thought, you know, 4 years old, she's doing this, 5 years old, you know, rope climbing, all of that. And then I think about the obesity epidemic in this country, and I just see it so often. So many kids who are, I just don't remember ever seeing that growing up as a kid. I by no means was remotely athletic, what you would call athletic. I hated gym class. I was not, you know, into sports by any means, but I also loved to play and go outside and ride my bike. And I think about when we grew up, you know, Laurel, you and I are somewhat close in age. I'm old, a lot older than you, I think. But anyway, the point is, when we were growing up, it was a much different environment for kids than it is today. And I think that there's something to be said about the fact that so many kids are spending so less time being active and maybe even being exposed to sports and just athletics in general, that and they're spending so much more time hunched over a tablet or a smartphone and eating junk food and, you know, going to Starbucks. This is not to make a judgment on Starbucks, but it's lifestyle. The things that kids are exposed to, or the lack of things that kids are exposed to, I can't imagine that that's part of why we have this epidemic in this country of kids being just sick and diabetic and overweight. What do you observe the same thing, that that's missing what you were exposed to? That it seemed like it was really natural for you to be, you know, exposed to athletic events, if you will, and sports, and you were interested because it was fun. Do you think that that's a big part of what's missing with today's generation?
Yeah, I do. And I think I see it in, I have a 4-year-old, my twin sister has a 4-year-old. And she's getting to the age when we were talking about it, like, well, you know, in a few months from now, she should be joining the swim team. Like, that's what we did. And and I find that while she's really interested in the tablets and everything, as soon as she has an activity that takes her away from that, like whether it's swimming or, you know, we try to teach her how to ride a bike or something, like some athletic thing, she sort of forgets about the tablet. And of course, she wants to go back to it. But I think that that's just a conscious thing that parents have to think about, like, let's get them into some kind of sport. Because once they realize how fun it is, they forget about that. Mm-hmm. And I do admit that I was very into video games at one point. I had a Nintendo club with my friends and we played all the time. But that was because I think we were so tired from our swimming practices that we would just sort of play during the day between practices. So I think there's a balance. And I do think, like, a parent has to sort of step in and say, okay, that's enough. We're going to go do this activity. And the kid will eventually realize how much fun it is if their friends are doing it. And it's almost like a distraction away from the tablets, because they're going to be there and they're always going to be there as a fallback for a kid.
That's a good point, you know, and I think this is a good cap for this part of the chat, but as you said that, I thought about, you know, this concept that sports and, you know, going out, even if it's just, you know, like when we were little, we came home from school, my mom would be like, go out and play. It was not go watch TV. She's like, go out and play. And you just went out and you played, whether it was capture the flag or hide and seek, whatever. But you were running around, we were roller skating, you were always outside playing. And I think about that encourages kids not only to be active, but to be friends, you know, make friends, and you're engaging with other kids your own age. And then when you think about technology enables us to connect with people all over the world, and that's wonderful, but you typically are alone. You're alone with your phone or your laptop, and so many kids, that's what you see. I'll see parents shopping and they'll have, you know, the kids up at the front of the store sitting on a chair, stooped over, you know, on a tablet. And it makes me sad, because I'm thinking, you know, obviously it's not a judgment on the parents that the kids are with them, but social media and or technology can be an isolating thing, whereas getting out and playing with other kids is community, and it's developing social skills. So there's that. And that's just food for thought for the parents that are listening, and really for all of us, you know. I mean, social media is my business, but I also make sure that I get out and I balance, just like you said, it's balance, getting out and having, you don't think about technology if you're going out and on an amazing hike or a triathlon,
yeah,
you know.
Just sort of forget about it. And that's one thing that I think about with my niece, is that she sees me on my phone all the time, because, you know, I'm always putting stuff on Instagram as well. And I think that I put it away. And when I'm around her, so that she doesn't think, oh, but you're doing it, so I could do it. So I think there is, yeah, like the balance aspect is key.
Yeah, we all can work on it for ourselves, but also for the people that we're being an example to. That could be a whole other topic. I might want to do that. I definitely am passionate about us, you know, making an impact on kids and this generation. Because to me, it breaks my heart when I see that, when I see kids and they're, you know, they can't fit in their clothes and they look like they're having difficulty walking upstairs. That breaks my heart. So anyway, we'll cover that later. That was a good, some good commentary there. And I think really good food for thought for everybody. But let's talk, first of all, let's talk, you know, I want to get straight to it. When were you hit with cancer, and what was your diagnosis? And I would, you know, How did you find out? And what were the first thoughts that went through your head as somebody who, because this happened after you'd been living a healthy life, a very active life. And sometimes there's a misconception out there with people that, you know, cancer or blood, you know, if you have high blood pressure, if you have heart disease, these are only things that happen to quote unquote unhealthy people. And that's not the case at all. I hate to say it this way, what's your cancer story? What happened to you? When were you diagnosed and what was your reaction?
Okay. I have a story and I'm happy to share it. Like you said, I was a very active, very fit 23-year-old when I got my diagnosis. I swam at George Washington University. I was a distance runner. And after I graduated, I moved to New York City to, in the back of my head, I was thinking I wanted to become a professional triathlete. I moved to New York, not specifically to do that, but I got a job in New York and I was working and also trying to train to get to the level where I think I need to be. And I was getting there. I was running a lot in Central Park and I had just purchased a bike and I did one little triathlon, actually it was with rollerblades instead of swimming. And I was on my way to sort of getting to the point where I thought I could do this. I had the goal of becoming a professional triathlete and being very good at it. When I found three lumps on my neck and I felt them there and I just felt them again a month later. And then I said, you know, I better go check this out. And turns out I had stage 3 Hodgkin's lymphoma. They found it in my abdomen as well.
Wow.
And so I immediately went into 6 months of chemotherapy and I did that for, you know, I stayed in New York. My twin sister moved from DC and moved in with me and we got an apartment in the West Village, 2 doors from my other sister. So we were all there together going through this treatment process and obviously stopped working out. I went to the gym here and there. This was years ago. So there wasn't that social media where I could connect mm-hmm. with others. So I felt like pretty isolated as far as knowing anyone else going through the same thing. There's one other girl who I would write letters to and talk on the phone. And she had also gone through the same thing. So I had one person that I sort of was able to communicate with. But one of the reasons why I like to share my story now is because I feel like with the social media aspect and being able to connect with so many people, it's so important because when you're going through something like that, you want to hear, and even if, you know, it's a friend who's going through it, you want to hear how someone made it through and what did they do? How did they feel? And I felt really terrible for a really long time. But I didn't let that stop me from thinking I wanted to be an athlete because that was one of the things that sort of helped me get through it.
Amazing.
It took me a really long time. It took me about 5 years to be able to go back to even kind of the shape I was in before. It really just changed me, you know, mentally it was difficult. Physically, I had lost all of my muscles and everything. Wow. So to be able to succeed in triathlon now is just, it's big for me. I mean, like people just assume, oh, she's out there running, you know, doing her thing. But it's a really big deal to me because I know where I came from.
And wow. I'm literally like, I'm almost speechless because I think when I hear this kind of story, it's like anytime I whine and complain about what I'm going through, you know, it seems very small. And when I hear you're, you know, 23, like I was in college, I can't, you know, and it's never going to be easy to get a cancer diagnosis ever. And one of the things I shared with you, and as I hear you say, as I hear you telling your story, it makes me realize it even more. I really think that I'd like to make sure that we have a lot of folks like you that are survivors on the show, because I have not been diagnosed myself, but I think that so many people, when they are, the first thing that's going to overwhelm them is just fear, fear of the unknown. And just what you said it really helped you to connect with other people to who had, you know, for lack of a better way of saying it, been there, done that, because you knew kind of what to expect. It didn't mean someone was going to go, oh, it's going to be okay. But it's like a woman that's having her first child talking to a mother that's been there who chose to have another child, right? It's going to help. And the same thing, different context here, when you know what to expect, like, hey, it's going to be a long road, but you can get through it. I've had a dear friend who was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer 2 years ago. She is, I mean, just back at it, loving life. But the first thing she said to me was, I'm so scared. I don't think I can do this. And my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer, I think about like the year before that. And her first thought was, you know, I'm 75. I don't think I can do this. And you, I heard you say that, you know, you kept thinking about your end goal. You knew that you wanted to be a triathlete again. You wanted to get back to it. So you were already focusing instead of looking at this like, my life is over. Everything's gone. You were already thinking about recovery.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely
immediate for you. Did you know the way, like, I'm going to beat this?
No, I mean, that would not be the case, the truth. I was definitely, I had moments of, yeah, I can't do this. Daily those thoughts go through your head, but then I had a calendar and I just like would mark the days down every day. Like, it's crazy to think like you just want life to go to fast forward for, you know, to get through it. It's the opposite of people say, like, enjoy every day. It was for me, it was just get through the day, just get through this day. And then, you know, but knowing, even if I was feeling really bad and thinking, you know, doomsday type thoughts, I thought, I always kept in my head that something, that I could still do it. And even if I had those thoughts of, you know, days of negativity, I would have a couple good days and say, there's still a chance I could get this, I could become an athlete again. And like I said, it took me like 5 years to be even able to have the kind of courage to even try. I mean, you go through trying to run 10 minutes and you can't do it. And then that's like, how am I ever going to be a professional athlete? I can't even run for 10 minutes. So it took me a really long time to have that confidence and, you know, just to be able to get to a race, even if it was a 5K run. And I think it's because I kept that, I did have, you know, overwhelming thoughts of negative thoughts. But at the same time, I kept my spirits up, even if I wasn't showing it to everybody. You know, they could think, oh, she's doing really, you know, she's angry, she's not doing well today. But I always thought in the back of my head, I know I can do this.
You know, what strikes me as you're talking is that you're keeping it real here. I mean, you're not trying to be sunshine and roses and like, it was okay, it was fine. And you also, you're not speaking as if, well, I was motivated. I did this. You made conscious decisions. Like, here's what was going on. I was scared. I chose to put on a good face for other people. I chose to think about what I wanted to do. And then, you know, you took the steps, and each one, it had to be like learning to walk again. And that had to be very humbling and difficult considering where you'd been in the past, but you did it. And then you kept making choices. You made choice. And there's a lot of people that go through extremely difficult medical challenges, but they kind of choose to become fatalistic. They choose to feel sorry for themselves. And hearing a story like you, where you did have fear, and you didn't just say, well, one day I woke up and I was happy and motivated. Is that a good assessment, that you had to make those internal choices yourself every day?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, is that you have to make choices. Like, you have a choice to be, you know, you own that choice. You can go down the negative road, or you can go down the positive one. And, you know, some days you don't have the energy or the ability to go down a positive one. That's fine also, but then you really need to make those positive choices when it matters. And like, I I think that's a really good point and way of getting through things. And that's that people told me that all the time. You have the choice, you know, you read about that, you read about things. And that's one of the reasons I really like to discuss, you know, just to share my story is that you have choices. Like, you know, I do feel I was lucky because my treatment was working. I mean, there were points where, it didn't work this week, but it worked. And, you know, so I'm really lucky in that case because that's not, you know, that I was lucky. Obviously, it doesn't happen for everybody. But at the same time, making those positive choices really, it can get you through something like that.
Fitfluential Radio fans, I have a gift for you. And by gift, I mean the gift that truly keeps on giving. Head on over right now to fitfluential.com/membership and sign up for our now live VIP Fitfluential membership. Our Fitfluential membership is not a diet program. It's not a workout program. You will have access to learning from some of the best trainers, dietitians, nutritionists, doctors, chiropractors, massage therapists, chefs, athletes, authors. I could go on and on and on. A lot of folks that have been on this show. What our Fitfluential membership is designed to do is meet you in the middle and provide all of the education and inspiration that you need, all of the community and accountability that you crave, and everything else that's going to keep you from being one of those statistics in January. All those people that say, I'm going to get healthier this year. I'm going to live my best life. And then by the third week in January, the second week in February, all of those aspirations are gone. Don't let that be you. Go to fitfluential.com/membership and sign up now.
I won't get off track on this one, but I watched a documentary a couple weeks ago. It was called Heal, and it was available on Amazon Video. And it was talking about the ability that our minds have to direct. It's almost like the placebo effect. If you really believe that you can get better or change your body, change your life, decrease your stress, anything, as simple or as complex as it is, that placebo effect is real. And there's so much data to support, whether it is in the context of cancer or whether it's in the context of weight loss, right? There is an inordinate amount of data that supports those that believe they can get there and those that choose to have a good attitude and move towards it, as opposed to the fatalistic, this sucks, you know, I must be the only one that can't get better or my life is over. You know, that's going to have an effect on the outcome. So, you know, again, it just speaks to the extraordinary person that you are at such a young age to be making those kinds of wise decisions that, you know, some of us, we don't figure that out until later in life. So that's awesome. It really is. And I want to ask one more question, then I want to get into some of the more, I don't want to say the more fun stuff, but some of your fun, I want to have you share some of your training, you know, how your training was different now versus earlier, and talk about how you took your baby steps. But one last question, when you look back at that time when you were first diagnosed, because I do hear this from a lot of the people that I know personally who have experienced a cancer diagnosis, and they'll share how frustrating it was for them with the reaction to people around them. And it sounds like you had a good support network with your twin sister and your other sister. But I've heard a lot of people say it really surprised me because friends disappeared or family disappeared, and they felt that their illness made other people so uncomfortable that people were scared to talk to them or to, you know, just be a friend. As somebody who's gone through this, what would you say to other people? Like, how can they support a friend or a family member who's had a diagnosis? What is it that you needed?
I actually had that fear. What if nobody wants to be friends with me anymore? That's a real fear for the person going through it. And I think that it's true for anyone going through any kind of scary situation is you just have to, like, I just said, you know what, I'm going to go about my daily business. I'm going to go about what I want to do. I'm not going to be scared to, if I'm not scared to go outside with a bald head and go to a job, then no one else is going to be scared about me. Hmm. So I think that, you know, I was lucky enough to get an internship with a photographer, and in New York, and she had gone through cancer as a younger person, and she took me under her wing and said, I don't care what you look like. This is your job. You do what you're told to do, and you work like anybody else. And I was able to do that internship with really well-known, one of the probably the legend in the photography world. And she brought me to photo shoots with celebrities, and no one cared. No one, people were, sometimes interested, but they didn't look at me like I was, had three heads or anything, had one bald head, and, they acted like, they treated me like I wasn't a normal person. And I think that you could sort of shrivel up and say, I don't want anyone to see me like this. And what if nobody's wants to be around me? Or you could just say, this is who I am. This is the same person. And your friends will be your friends. The people who don't want to be involved with you because you might look different, they probably aren't your friends anyway. So I just think that coming out of your shell, not being scared, and it can be for any, someone that, gains weight or, anything, any kind of sort of insecurities that somebody has, you just have to be yourself.
That's true. And I think just to what you said, whether it's talking to somebody who's had a scary diagnosis or it's somebody who's frustrated about their weight or, trying to start running and they can't get there and they're frustrated. Too many of us, there's a saying, they say, too many of us listen to reply instead of listening to understand. And I know I've been guilty of that because I'm an interrupter. I'm working on that. I had to learn that early on the podcast. Somebody would say something, I'm like, wait, and I'm learning to just finish and listen. And then you reply, but listen, because too many of us, and I think that can be one of the most, the biggest gift we can give to others in any situation, really just listen. I know that when my mom was going through her chemo, she would always apologize and say, I'm so sorry that I don't have energy. I'm sorry that I'm such a downer. And I'm like, I think you're allowed to be down. That's cool. And you're not here to bring sunshine and rainbows into my life right now. You're here. I'm here for you, not the other way around. And sometimes that's just what they need, just to keep it real, not keep it fake. So that's awesome. I'd like to dive into, again, some of where you are now. And as somebody who you had the first part of your life before your diagnosis, you were so active, you were a triathlete. I always screw that up. And then you mentioned, it took you about 5 years. Now was that 5 years of treatment, or it's that your body was so different after the chemo and after everything you went through that it was a 5 year period of transition in your training? What was that like, and how did you progress into, getting back to your active self that you are now? What did that look like? And I know that's a loaded question, but
no, it's a good question, because people, you hear examples of people finishing chemo and jumping into a race or something, and everybody's different. And my, it hit me to a different way. There were a couple sort of things that happened after the chemo was done. The treatment's done, but is it done after 6 months? But everybody knows that it kind of crushes you after that. So then you have to deal with all of the effects of that prior 6 months. So I just wasn't really able to do much. And I tried to go to the gym and walk and hike and do other things. That I didn't ride my bike for a long time. I got into photography, and I got into working at magazines, and sort of took that and started a new career as a result of coming back from getting sick as well. So, you never know what's going to happen. So I got into that career, and I just sort of exercised on the side. And I thought I did still, while I was doing that, my twin sister was getting into triathlon, and she was getting very good at it. And so I finally, after about 4 years, I said, I think I might be able to do a 5K. So I did a 5K with, in the Central Park with my sister. My mom walked it, and we did this Mother's Day 5K, and they had a category for cancer survivors, and I won. nobody, you know, of course, I'm thinking, of course I won. It was, you know, I should have won, but I go back and look at the time. My time was really slow compared to what I had done and what I do now. So, but it was, that was one of the first things I did that made me realize I could get back into it. So started with the running. I started trying to just build myself to run 40 minutes. That was a big milestone to run 40 minutes because I now I run, you know, four hours.
I thought you were going to say 4 days.
So that was just a big deal. So the turning point was that my sister went to the World Championships to compete in Switzerland. And I went to visit, to watch her, compete there. And it was the highest level of triathlon. And I saw all these people doing it. And I said, it really just lit a fire in me. And I said, I can do this. I know I'm just as fast as my sister and as fast as these other girls out there. So the next year I had my sister train me and she got me on eating better. I was just sort of eating French fries and, you know, for 3 meals a day, you know, just kind of doing whatever I wanted. Cause after you go through something like that, it's like, well, yeah, I'll just eat whatever. So she got me on track to eat better. And, and it took me about a year of just sort of getting the training she was giving me. I started competing and doing well right away. Became a pro triathlete after 1 year of competing as an amateur.
I think I just took several notes with some of the last things that you said. And for anybody listening, I think what I'm picking up out of that is, you know, you've got to stop. We all have to, it's the old adage. We all have to run our own race. And that's whether we have extenuating circumstances like sickness. We all have seasons of life, right? And for you, you went through a time where your body was in many ways working against you. Your mind was maybe not ready. And then it was this point, I love it, you know, when you go to the Switzerland event and all of a sudden there's this, you said, I was, you know, I had a fire lit within me and you wanted, and it was almost like friendly competition, right? And that spurred you on. And I think that that's great for all of us, the friendly competition. And that's a big part of a successful fitness journey that I think it's a successful component is community, whether it's competition or whether it's just the community and support of others that are doing that are going to spur you on. It's, of course, my dad's dog decides to bark in the middle of our podcast, but what are you going to do? So I loved what you said there. And what surprised me, I don't know why this surprised me, when you said that after, and I'm curious if others that you have talked to that are survivors were the same way. So after you survived cancer, you said that your diet was kind of really bad for a while. Is that common? Do you know? Or did you talk to other people that were like, you know, hey, I've been through this and you didn't have any desire to really necessarily eat healthy? Or was that just random? Was that like a conscious choice?
It was for a while. I didn't like my taste buds went, I think I couldn't taste anything anyway.
True. I've heard that.
And so the only thing I ever felt like eating was salad and French fries.
That sounds like a kind of a nice lunch right now, actually.
I know. I still think that to this day, that's my favorite meal. I also think I just was not, I was kind of just like not, I think it's personal though, because I think I hear people that are very strict with their diets and they're eating healing foods and,
yeah,
you know, I would say I probably do a little bit more of that now than I did, but that's all, you know, I think it's a personal thing.
Sure.
But for me, it was definitely like, I couldn't taste anything. I mean, it was just what I felt like eating. Sometimes if that's the only thing you feel like eating, then it's like, okay, you're eating. At least you're eating.
Exactly. I've actually heard both from my friend Linda, who I'm going to interview on the show. She's a survivor. And then my mom, they both, I think the chemo effects, and they both said, you know, there was a time period my mom couldn't eat anything hot. And this is for everybody listening. This was while she was going through chemo. So I don't want to make generalizations. But you know, we're getting to the end of our time. Okay. I need to respect your time for today. And I definitely want to follow up with you, Laurel. I think it'd be great to have you back on the show, maybe to be very specific about, you know, triathlon. I don't know why this word always stumps me. I was about to say triathlonism. Being a triathlete and your training and so on for those that are, you know, in that space and want to learn more from a seasoned individual like yourself. But what would you say, I think this would be a good way to close. You know, you've come through so much and now you are obviously back at it. You are, you know, triathlon all over the place. What's your life look like today as far as your training split? How do you train every week? And what do you eat? What's like a typical day like for you? And I'm sure that those are listening that are seasoned triathletes, but also those that are maybe just thinking like, hey, I'm a runner. I want to start, you know, exploring that. What does that look like?
Well, it's a typical day for me. Usually starts with, I do a combination of swimming, biking, running, strength training, Pilates, not all on the same day, but a week would encompass all of those different things. So a typical Monday starts out with Pilates class to sort of stretch out from the weekend's training. And then I usually do an easier swim because typically on the weekends I have harder sessions. And then I will swim and do a combination of swimming and biking. Maybe just a run. But in total, I take a day off completely, probably about once every 2 weeks. Hmm. And I take days where I just go to the gym or just do something easy. So I factor the easy stuff in, but when I train hard, I try to train really hard. And I set my, you know, it can go up to about 20 hours a week, 20 to 25 hours a week of training.
Wow.
So it's kind of an all day. Sometimes, especially when you're training for an Ironman event, I just feel like I'm exercising all day long. So that is literally what it can be. Either that or just laying on my bed staring into space because I'm so tired I can't do anything. But I am definitely the kind of athlete that also likes, sometimes when I say, you know what, I don't feel good today, I'll go shopping. I'll just walk around. And like I call it my like shopping recovery days because you have to keep that in check. Like you don't want to do too much. And I found some really good success in my races as a result of sort of keeping it balanced.
So I think what we're hearing is that shopping is indeed therapeutic and recommended.
I don't buy anything. Like I rarely buy anything. I just walk out.
Then you're a stronger woman than I am, Laurel, because I can shop like it's my cardio. So there's that. But that's awesome. And I have to ask you this, considering how intense your training is, which I can only imagine how many times you, you know, I mean, I'm not at all comparing my training to yours, but when I train with my trainer in Austin, he trains me hard. And it is the best training I've ever had in my whole life. But when I train with Blaine and I'm walking out to my car, because of just the style of training and it's really focused on strength, and I find myself getting to the car going, I don't even want to start my car. Well, so I can only, you know, I can only imagine how you feel with the intensity and the duration of your training. And I'm curious how, you know, what, and this is really just for example, this is not to tell it, but how much do you eat throughout the day? Do you have to strategically, when one is a triathlete, do you have to eat a lot more to fuel all that activity?
Yes, there's definitely a lot more eating. And that's one of the reasons where like I'd be walking down the street in New York City and people would stop me and say, what do you eat to look like that? Like not saying, you know, just people are very direct in New York. I would stop you and say, excuse me, but what do you eat? And I have to say, I eat a lot. People don't, you know, people are like, what? They wanted me to say like, you know, I eat grass all day long. That's not the case. Because that's one of the reasons my sister and I started a blog for athletes called athletefood.com. And it's just shows what we eat. And I do eat a lot, but I eat a lot of good stuff. I don't do the French fries during the training. You can't do that. You can't eat French fries and go out for a run after it doesn't work. So yeah, I do eat a lot of smaller meals and snacks. Sometimes I feel like, I'll just be craving real food, I call it. If you're doing a long day of exercise, you just have to keep it peanut butter based, chocolate, you know, just easier things to digest. And then, and finally it's a reward is to have like a real meal at the end of the day. Not all days are like that, but yeah, I do eat I would say I eat a lot more.
My stomach's growling as we're recording here. I've totally gone over, but you know, you just said something great we can close on, because I'd like you to reference that website, The Athlete's Food, just in closing. But how about we do this? Here's my last question, and I'd like to have you, for those that are listening that are, you know, maybe they've been running for a while, they're doing marathons and they really want to take that next step into, because we do get a lot of questions actually about this. They want to take steps into becoming, to exploring triathlons and to becoming a triathlete, and they tend to not know where to start. So I would love to have you share maybe whatever, you know, your top tip or your top three tips, something for folks that are looking to get started. What, you know, is it signing up with the trainer? Is it, hey, I went to this website or whatever. So what would be your tips for people that are interested in moving in that direction? And then lastly, if you can just tell people on that note, where can they connect with you online? Tell them about that athlete food site that you mentioned, because we'll link that up in the show notes. And then I think you also have a site or a blog with your sister. So let us know where that is. Just where can we find you online? But before you say that, what are your tips for newbie triathletes?
Well, for a newbie triathlete, you mentioned something that's really important. And that's what I started with, is I joined a running group. And if they had one, I would have joined a triathlon group. But it's just to be around others, and to the best way to learn is learning from someone who's done it before. So I definitely think that signing, just finding a group and joining people for the motivation, as well as learning what they've from other people's experiences, is really key. With triathlon, there's a lot of gear that you have to purchase. And another reason a group is good is that you can look into getting used gear from other people. I'm just a huge proponent of that. There's so much to buy. And one of the reasons that people are sort of timid about getting into triathlon is, oh, I have to get a bike and I have to get a wetsuit and all of this other stuff. But if you find others that you could borrow a bike, you could borrow a wetsuit until you find out that you really want to get into it and make the investment. And you know, race entries are not cheap either. So it's kind of good to meet other people and I'm open to new people that want to get into the sport. You can go to my website and find my email address on athletefood.com. And if you have any questions, I'm also a coach as well. So
that's awesome.
So I'm coaching new triathletes. So I know how it is for people and as well as experienced people. So. But yes, as far as our website, you can find my my email address there, as well as our website. We have a lot of healthy, we do publish triathlon tips and healthy recipes for athletes on athletefood.com.
That's awesome. Awesome. This was really cool. I mean, in my brain, I look at triathletes and I'm like, you guys are like Wonder Woman. And I want to be that, but I know it's not my path in life, but I have such mad respect for it. And I think it is, I mean, hearing your story, and I also loved how, as you shared your story today, you know, the cancer story before, during, and after, you know, it wasn't like, well, I just did this and then I just started running again and everything was super and it was fine. You kept it real, and it wasn't an overnight journey, and none of us should expect that in any area of in any area of our lives, whether it's work related, relationship related, sickness, diet, weight loss, fitness, whatever. We really should commit to everything for the long term and give ourselves more time and be more compassionate with ourselves. So it really was a sincere pleasure to have you on the show, Laurel. I loved this chat. I think there's a lot of things we could chat about if we can work it out with your schedule this year to have you back a couple times. So I will definitely follow up with you on that, and we'll get you back on the show. For everybody listening, we will, of course, link up to everything that Laurel mentioned in the show, and potentially maybe some triathlete resources as well, maybe links to local groups. If we can find that, we'll link that up for you in fitfluentialradio.com, the show notes. If you have any questions that we can pass on, you know, we encourage you to find Laurel's site and contact her directly. But any questions for when we have her back on, you can email this to podcast@fitfluential.com. And until next time, you guys have a great rest of the week. We will see you here on Fitfluential Radio next time.
Also, I wanted to mention I have active on Instagram. It's a good way to contact me as well at Athlete Style. And that will also be in the show notes.
So. Oh, cool. I need to hold on. I'm actually writing that down. Athlete Style.
Yeah.
Athlete That's way style. Cool. All right. I'm going to be following you later on today. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Laurel, you are awesome. We will have you back on the show. And everybody, we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of Fitfluential Radio. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Please visit us on iTunes and like this episode and subscribe to the podcast. We want this to be your podcast, so please head over to iTunes, write a review, and give us your feedback. Give us your ideas and even guest suggestions. For a full transcript of all episodes and bonus giveaways, be sure to visit fitfluentialradio.com. We look forward to seeing you again for the next episode of Fitfluential Radio. Peace! Please remember our disclaimer for the podcast. The materials and content discussed within the podcast are the opinions of host Kelly Alexa and the guests interviewed. This information is intended as general information only for listeners of the podcast. Listeners should always seek professional advice, and content and opinions expressed in the podcast should never be construed as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.